We're learning about road construction technology advancements here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In the height of summer road repair season, crews are on the other side of orange cones and behind barriers working on road and highway projects. The State Transportation Department identifies 115 that are underway around our state on its 511 construction map. The costs of road and highway construction are mounting. In 2018, the G20 Global Infrastructure Hub projected a $15 trillion infrastructure investment gap worldwide 20 years from now. Do you wonder how or why a highway is designed the way it is? What questions do you have about new construction technologies and their related costs? We're at 800-642-1234. Ken Micah is president of the Wisconsin section of the American Society of Civil Engineers. He's a Green Bay-based project engineer for Geocentric Consultants, an international engineering firm. Ken, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know, we have highways in our country that were generally designed to last, 20 years or so. Many highways are now over 50 years old. What happens to roads if you're using them decades beyond their intended time to upgrade them?
Well, the roads tend to deteriorate and they're just not designed or built the way that they were intended to. A lot of times roads are built at a certain way where we expect the frequency of travelers and vehicles to stay consistent over a 20-year period, or at least see some type of increase over a 20-year period. But, you know, that's 20 years away from the reality. And, you know, with different demographics and social people moving out to, say, urban sprawl, moving out to the country, or different parts of the urban areas, turning more rural and rural turning more urban. There's many factors that play into it. And, you know, as more and more the population has increased, so has the rural areas becoming more urban.
There aren't any places in Wisconsin where we're actually building brand new highways. But in the cases where you're seeing major modifications or major upgrades to existing highways, what are some of those common changes and improvements?
Well, I would take a step back. We are not building any more major highways, mm-hmm. but you're starting to see auxiliary highways being built, Waukesha Bypass, for example, or even the Brown County Bypass. That's two examples of, while they're not major highways being built, in essence, it's similar setup to as if you would be building a major highway, just on a smaller scale. But onto the conversation of taking the existing highways and trying to retrofit them, there's many things going on. There's many research different groups in Wisconsin are doing, both at UW-Platteville and at UW-Madison, as well as other institutes here, institutions here in Wisconsin, looking at different ways to just even make saw cuts, you know, where they try to force the brakes to occur in concrete pavement to last a little bit longer by putting a sealant in them to prevent water and potentially ice getting into them and causing potholes after your multiple freeze-thaw cycles.
When it comes to widening roads, is that a difficult proposition to make roads wider?
Widening can be difficult depending on the real estate that's in the area. For example, you know, there's been many talks about the I-94 corridor right around Miller Park to the Zoo Interchange, or even from Miller Park to the Marquette Interchange. There's been many talks about widening there, but there's not the real estate due to one aspect being the cemetery over there. And so they've looked at also doing a double decker, but that brings in other challenges. And so I believe the most recent thing that they've done to try to get, you know, a little bit more lanage in there is actually decrease the lane widths for your standard vehicles. So widening can be a very difficult task, especially if you don't have the real estate. If you're more in a rural area, widening is it's a little bit more typical because you're not trying to expand into existing buildings or real estate that's already been developed.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Ken Micah, a civil engineer based in Green Bay. We're exploring technology advancements in road building and repair. Taking your questions, do you wonder how or why a highway was designed the way it was? What questions do you have about technology innovations for highway and road design? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Ken, you mentioned double-decker sections of road, double-decker highways. We don't see those in Wisconsin. What are they?
Double-decker highways are typical highways where you see literally one highway on top of the other. And you could either be the lower highway goes in one direction and the upper the opposite direction, or the lower highway will be more of a commuting for local traffic, and the upper deck is for getting through an urban population a lot quicker, where you have less off-ramps, more like an urban speedway.
Do you see their advantages? Are double-deckers very expensive?
Double-deckers are very expensive because you're looking at a lot more concrete, a lot more structural design going into them. It's not like you're just putting it on the earth where the soil that the platform is on is supported. You're using multiple materials. In essence, you're almost doubling your materials because you have, instead of a single deck, you got a multiple deck. The other issue you run into is noise. There's potential for more noise generated, but the plus side is you're able to move vehicles through the corridor a lot faster, a lot less congestion. And with less congestion, you also have the ability to hopefully limit and mitigate the risk of accidents and fatalities.
We saw noise barriers put up, I don't know, maybe in the 1980s. Are those still built consistently along interstates and highways? Do those barriers work?
Depending on the location and where you're trying to measure the point of compliance for the noise, if you're right up against it and that's where you're monitoring from the research I've seen, they do work. But if you are further away, possibly even up a hill, due to the way that noise waves bounce, it's easy for the noise from an interstate system or a highway to bounce over the wall specifically. So it really depends on the point of compliance for trying to meet that noise mitigation threshold.
Do engineers take noise into consideration as they're designing these systems and the upgrades?
Yes, they definitely take into account noise. They try to look at different areas to improve, whether that's putting the grade above where the road base is at or above a home, or if they can actually put it a little bit below ground based on existing soils and topography, what kind of potential effect will it occur with the noise? Does it make sense to put up a noise barrier, or can it be something more natural, something that has more aesthetically pleasing? There's many different things that they can look at doing to help try to mitigate it. But at the end of the day, it matters is what's the point of compliance, in the area of that barrier itself.
We're spending the hour with civil engineer Ken Micah, learning about technology developments in road repair and construction design. Have you noticed an increase or decrease in highway construction? Do you think the change is pandemic related? What shape are the highways in around you? Do they need repair? How does it feel to drive on a newly opened road? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with Ken Micah right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're learning about road construction technology advancements here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Earlier in the pandemic, reports surfaced that as Americans stayed home and didn't commute to work, it created safer conditions for highway work crews to jackhammer and to close more lanes. And the news outlet Wired reported in May that transportation departments straight across the country were reaping the benefits of fixing roads without worrying about driver congestion. Said in Wisconsin and Arizona, crews were taking the opportunity to work day and night. Did you see a road repair boom in your area? Do you notice differences in the materials used to resurface the roads you drive on? Has a striping project caused you to see better at night? Join in at 800-642-1234. We have civil engineer Ken Mica, who's our guide. He's president of the Wisconsin section of the American Society of Civil Engineers. Ken, you were mentioning there the Interstate 94 in Milwaukee County, that East-West Corridor project, a major highway project that Governor Evers wants to revive. And the challenge there that you see is real estate. What other issues are there with this project?
Other issues with the project is also, besides the real estate, is just trying to get a more straightened highway there. I know there's plenty of accidents that occur right at the Miller Park area with the turn there. And with the heavy traffic that's going through Milwaukee as population increases in the general area and people commuting, the highway was built many years ago for a certain threshold of vehicles and traffic. And that has increased over the years, and there's been limited ability to really do much more than some modifications to the grading as well as the road surface. And so there's a need for a major improvement there.
So basically you're saying there's only so much straightening out you can do.
That is correct, unless there's some real estate that it's able to acquire. So real estate is a big thing when it comes to transportation projects, especially if you want to widen or do something different. Otherwise, you're looking at, as we talked earlier, the double-decker approach, but that also has its benefits, but also its limitations as well. What? And it has costs involved.
Why do costs seem to skyrocket when a construction project is delayed or gets behind schedule or is even revived years later?
Sure. So the difference, the big thing is cost. When anything gets delayed, contractor has equipment on the project. And so if their equipment's not moving, they're still paying rent on that equipment and they're not being productive in completing the work. And so, they still need to get paid for their equipment sitting there because they're paying either somebody else that they're renting from or they're paying insurance on the equipment. And so they're just not progressing. If a project is delayed several years, usually that cost increase right there is just based on inflation alone, or it could be something along the line of materials. Steel prices change quite a bit. Concrete prices change over the years as well. So, as a project delays, the initial price tag might be one number, and then 5 years later, you hear it jumping. And, you might have sticker shock, but that's just the reality of the industry because of the cost of equipment and materials and supplies.
I wonder how much do planners build in for expected delays? Like they're going to expect delays along the way.
Correct. Correct. And it's not just the planners, but the contractors as well. Mm-hmm. They'll plan for, at a minimum, the big one that everybody always talks about when it comes to construction is how many weather delays you're going to have. We're in Wisconsin. So if we're going to be working through the summer, spring, summer, fall, we're going to expect rain. The big difficult thing with rain is trying to move soil. If you try to move soil when it's raining, you're going to actually lose a couple more days because you're just going to make a complete mess. But then if we're starting to talk about doing construction in the winter, there's a lot more issues to work with. Snow, for example. You need to get the snow out of the way to do your work. Well, what happens if we get a snowstorm and you have nowhere to go? How much more delayed are you going to be? We're just trying to get that snow out of the way. Where are you going to put that snow? And so that's a couple factors there, depending on the social and economic situation with materials, for example, steel. delays around that for contractors and engineers might try to procure that equipment or the materials well in advance, month, 2 months in advance before they really need it, just because they know that it's going to take them that much longer to get that material.
We're talking with Ken Micah, president of the Wisconsin section of the American Society of Civil Engineers. He's a project engineer in Green Bay. We're learning about the technology advancements in construction and what goes into highway repair. You can join in. What ways do you think highway travel could be improved with changes to the design or construction of roads? Do you live near Foxconn? What is it like to see a large highway construction that is building needs there? Join in at 800-642-1234. Ken, what impact has the pandemic had on highway road construction that you see across Wisconsin?
So across Wisconsin, I've heard that Wisconsin DOT Craig Thompson has stated that there's about 371 state highway and bridge projects planned for this construction season, and they are not being impacted by the current pandemic. In other states across the country, we are hearing that projects are being delayed or canceled. But the big thing that we're seeing across the country, even in Wisconsin, is that transportation revenues are down. The great thing is that people aren't driving during the pandemic as much, so it's a lot safer to be doing these types of construction projects, highway projects. I can speak to it. I've been on some highway projects in the past, and it's not fun when people are flying past you 30, 40, 50 miles per hour. But because people are not flying past you as much, there's also the downside, and that's revenue. And so, Wisconsin's gas tax, which is more or less, we shouldn't really be calling it a tax. It's a user fee, because the only people that pay for it are the people that are using the gas, that is down. And so Wisconsin is not generating as much user fee for gas because of less miles being traveled during this situation. People are staying home. They're working at home. School was went virtual, and then a lot of things are still virtual. So the revenue has not picked up from people driving every day as they were pre-pandemic.
Do you anticipate that projects would not be started from the get-go, or are there concerns that projects are midway or partially done and now funds are running dry?
I would be concerned that in the future, in the next year or 2 years, we could see delay in projects, or we might have to make the critical decision. Is it more important to do this bridge repair than it is to do this pavement rehab? Typically we're very concerned about bridges, especially what happened down in Florida recently, as well as I-35 Minnesota. Usually those types of projects lead to catastrophes, so we like to make sure that we hit the bridges first. But then the problem with the highways and road rehabs is, we're paying for them out of our pockets with car repairs. And, the typical person in Wisconsin is paying almost $9 a day for inadequate roads. And so we're really paying for those out of the pocket now. And it could mean that we're paying more than $9 a day for, car repairs and maintenance on our vehicles.
Well, let's go back to bridges. Many states, including Wisconsin, are dealing with structurally deficient bridges. What are the engineering challenges of bridge repair and bridge replacement?
There's a lot of challenges. One is, for example, when you want to repair and replace the bridge, can you still have vehicles go over that bridge? Or do you need to bypass that bridge altogether? Most notably was prior to the zoo interchange work being done, the complete zoo interchange, there was the emergency bridge rehab done, and they had to work real quick to figure out, can we put the bridge in the same spot, or can we move it over a little bit to keep traffic moving, and then just have the bridge move over a little bit. There's, a lot of real estate over there, so they were able to make that project work.
I mean, you make it sound so easy. Look, just move the bridge over a little bit.
And it's not easy.
No.
you know, I know quite a few engineers that do bridge design work, and it's definitely not an easy task. I give them a lot of credit. I don't know if I could do the bridge design work. Obviously, I don't think I know I can, but I give them props for what they have to do for trying to figure out, you know, sequencing and making, you know, sure everything happens and everybody is safe, both on the construction site as well as the people traveling over them.
Civil engineer Ken Micah is our guide to the roads. We go over the bridges, the technology innovations as highways get redesigned, repaired, some built from scratch. Do you live near the Foxconn manufacturing facility? What was it like to see large-scale highway construction in anticipation of Foxconn's needs? Have you driven in Miami or Austin, Texas with the double-decker freeways? Do you think they should build those around Milwaukee? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your road design questions. We'll pick this up with Ken Micah right after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a heads up on our programming. Join us tonight at 8 for live NPR coverage of the Democratic National Convention from Milwaukee. It's a mix of virtual and live events that are underway. We bring you up to speed and have a recap tonight through Thursday night, starting at 8, right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're learning about the technology of road building and repair. The State Transportation Department has 115 road construction projects underway in different stages statewide. What improvements in the design of Wisconsin highways would you like to see? Can you point to another state that has a better highway system design? Which state is it and why? Are you concerned about costly washouts? What do you want to know about keeping water off roads? It's 800-642-1234 to join in. We have the Wisconsin president of the American Society of Civil Engineers. Ken Micah is our guide. Let's take a call now. Katie is joining us from Clinton this morning. Hi, Katie.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I know he had just touched on how you're going to have to make those decisions between a bridge or a road when the money starts getting tight. With COVID and people not working and therefore not having the taxes going into the state coffers and the county coffers and the township coffers, that's going to be a trickle-down type of thing. I know most municipalities have got their budget set for this year, but when do we start seeing that cut? How do you make those decisions, and how do you get that information out to people that, you know, because of COVID and not the money coming in, we can't put it out?
Katie, thanks. Ken, how do you make those tough calls there on what to prioritize?
Well, and that's where the Wisconsin DOT will provide their recommendations. But then at the end of the day, it's our elected officials that make the determination on what gets funded, what does not get funded. You know, years ago, we used to operate more in a fashion where we planned ahead. But it seems within recent times, trying to be more fiscally responsible, we aren't really planning ahead. We're more or less working in an emergency fashion. And so that's where some of the issues are, where, you know, we won't plan for this bridge to be replaced, but if it becomes critical where we have to shut it down, then it's going to get an emergency repair because of the situation.
Well,
we hope that we don't get to that point, but, you know, that's what is happening more and more.
Well, in some rural areas, one road going in and out may be the lifeline to a community. And certainly for medical emergencies and otherwise, that single road needs to be in good shape. How do you respond to that?
Well, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of communities that have that where there's one road in, one road out. We saw that about a year or two ago with the flooding in northern Wisconsin, where those lifelines were washed away from floods. And that's where we need to be more conscious is, you know, can we put a second road, a second lifeline to that community, or how can we prepare more resilient roads to the changing in weather conditions and the changing in climate in certain areas of the state?
What does flooding and washouts do to roads? What is the engineering impact?
Well, with flooding and washouts, you know, moving water can move anything. The faster it moves, the more damage it can do. And so with engineers, especially road highway engineers, they're always trying to find the best way or the best way to get the water away from the road. You know, whether it hits the road, how fast can it get off the road so that the road is not as slick, especially for traffic. But then too, we can't just get it off the road and let it sit on the side of the road. We have to move it somewhere else, because if the water just sits along the side of the road, it'll eventually back up underneath the road. And that's how more the roads can deteriorate a lot faster than their design and cause more damage to obviously the road, but then the personal vehicles as well. And then for, you know, fast moving floods, you know, the biggest thing is how do you manage your stormwater around the roadway so that it doesn't go onto the road, but it stays effectively away from it. So that's why when we talk highway design, it's not just the highway transportation engineers that are working on design. You also have quite a bit of stormwater engineers as well, trying to make sure that the water gets off the road and or stays off the road during elevated precipitation events.
How do retaining walls work, and do they affect how much water is being held back?
Sure. So retaining walls, they can work in two different ways. One, they could retaining walls could hold the road up where there's a steep cut. You see that, especially in Northeast Wisconsin. But they'll hold the road up as a structural support. The other way is that you can, especially around the Mitchell Interchange in Milwaukee, where you see the road goes down and there's a bunch of the retaining walls and the tunnels right there. And it holds the soil back so that you could have the different interchange system with the different elevations and road base work closely together. Anytime you deal with impermeable material, being concrete or retaining walls, you know, water is not going to typically go in them unless you have a different type of technology. So you have to figure out a way to get rid of the water. And so anytime you add more concrete or retaining walls, you really got to figure out a way to move that water. And you can't just let the water build up behind a retaining wall, because that could actually impact the structural integrity of that retaining wall. And so you have to install a certain type of underground drains behind the wall or somewhere else to help pull the water out and move it to a place where it's not going to impede the wall or the road.
Yeah, that water has to go somewhere, and it's a question of how, you know, where do you direct it, and, you know, what damage may it cause regardless of where you move it.
Exactly.
We're talking with Ken Micah, president of the Wisconsin section of the American Society of Civil Engineers. He's a project engineer in Green Bay. He's explaining advancements in the construction and design of highways, road construction, and what we should know. What shape are the highways in around you? Do they need repair? Does something more need to be done to keep water off highway surfaces? Join in with your insights, your questions about road construction design at 800-642-1234. Let's look at concrete versus asphalt. Our highways around here are made primarily of either of those materials. How do they differ, and what are the pros and cons of each?
So concrete, you'll see that more in heavy trafficked areas where you run the risk of a little bit more congestion as well as stop and go traffic. It's a much stronger material, but it's more expensive. And it's not as malleable as asphalt. Asphalt is typically a cheaper material. But when I say cheaper, it's less expensive. It's really not a cheap material at all. You see that more in fast-moving highway or highways that have a less heavy traffic. Roadways are typically impacted more by your truck traffic, you know, semi-trucks or heavy equipment. than by your personal commuter vehicles. And that's because of the weight of those trucks and the vibrations coming off of the trucks because of their weight and their powerful engines. And so usually when you have an area where you could have a lot more trucks or even bus traffic where they'll be stopping in that, you'll see the more concrete pavement. So usually major interstate systems in downtown areas will be more concrete typically. And then as you get out in more rural areas, you might see more asphalt. Some locations, they'll start out with concrete, and then eventually they'll bounce over to an asphalt material because the wearing layer of the concrete has been worn down so much. There's cracking, there are pothole issues. And then at that point, what they'll do is they'll grind down the top layer of that concrete surface and then put down a asphalt layer on top of that, and then they'll use the original concrete as a foundation, and then the asphalt actually acts as a wearing surface for some time. And so that's another way to get a further use out of that material before you have to do a total rehab or reconstruction.
Yeah, you know, it's sounding more and more like being in the dentist chair.
Sometimes it can be like that with roadway construction.
Well, let's look at self-healing concrete here, designed by your alma mater, UW-Platteville, I understand. What is self-healing concrete?
Well, Platteville right now, they're looking at how to protect concrete, especially concrete joints right now. But there's some studies going on where self-healing concrete has a bacteria in it, and that when it becomes wet, it actually produces limestone, and it basically solidifies the cracks in concrete. There's also a research being done right now for asphalt as well by taking little wires, steel wires, like steel wool wires, and mixing that into the asphalt, and they're able to see the cracks in the asphalt heal themselves because of conductivity. With the asphalt heating up, it actually repairs itself in a short term. And they're projecting that that could actually lengthen the useful life out of asphalt.
How long does it take for these new ideas to really take hold and become part of construction design in the roads we go on?
Usually it takes quite a bit of time. Research is the big thing, but then also finding a government agency that will let you try that material out in the look wherever you're trying to get the work done. A lot of times the states are required, depending on the road that it's specifically used on, to follow the US DOT standards. So if you're trying to do anything on a US DOT roadway, you have to follow their standards, or you have to get an approval from them to change it up.
Talking with Ken Micah, civil engineer in Green Bay, we're exploring technology advancements in road building and repair. Is there a highway repair project underway near you? Sound off on roundabouts. Do you love them or hate them? Where do you encounter roundabouts, and do they work? 800-642-1234. Still time to talk. Back in a minute with Ken Micah here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Ken Micah. He's a civil engineer in Green Bay. We're learning about road construction technology advancements at a time when road projects are booming in some areas due to the reduction of traffic congestion amid the pandemic. Let's take a call. Patrick is with us from Richland Center. Hi, Patrick.
Yes, good morning. Good show. Hey, I was wondering, are there any states that restrict the huge trucks and equipment that are tearing up the roads? I mean, you can really see it out here where the huge, heavy equipment and big, heavy trucks. In fact, I attended a DOT meeting some years ago, and they said the average automobile or pickup truck doesn't do any damage to the roads. It's all by the huge trucks. Do some states have restrictions on their weight?
Patrick, thanks. Ken, what about weight limits?
Yeah, so a lot of states do have weight limits depending on the road. A lot of states will inspect the roadway and see that it is deteriorating, and then we'll put a weight limit on a road. In addition, they also, especially the northern states, Wisconsin, for example, will actually put weight limits on roads in the spring when the ground starts thawing out, because the soils underneath the roadway can come soft, and running the trucks over the ground while it's soft can actually deteriorate the roads even more. A lot of times with the highways or non-highways, permitting is required depending on the load. But absolutely right there, that's, you know, the general vehicle does not, rarely does any damage, if at all, to the roadways, that it's the larger trucks and heavy vehicles that do a lot of the damage. Mm-hmm. And so even with the current pandemic situation, while we're seeing less commuters on the road, the pandemic has shown how important the transportation system is for our nation, especially trying to get materials through during this pandemic. And so a lot of the trucks are still on the road. And so while we might not be getting the revenues that we need for future road repairs, the roadway system is still being used and still, you know, I don't want to say that's getting beaten up, but it's getting worn while
there's still the wear and tear rest. There. Yeah.
Yes.
Let's bring in Jim in Portage. Jim, hi. Hi there, Jim. Can you hear us? Nope, I guess Jim is not there. I want to take a moment here and talk about, because Jim wanted to bring up road noise, and rumble strips or sleeper strips, as they're sometimes called, are, you know, to help notify a driver if they're drifting off the road or across a divided lane. How has this technology taken hold?
As for the rumble strips and that, they've been around for a very long time. And, you know, as a technology, it's a thing that's really hasn't needed much improvement over the years, for the fact that, you know, you hear the person, you know, as you're driving, if you run over them, you hear it. But then you also hear a car or two over, you know, they're because of the uneven surface and the way tire treads roll over them. They make quite a bit of noise, and you can tell right away if somebody's driving over one or not. Or even when you get into rural areas where you got rumble strips to notify you right before you come up to a stop sign. It's a great technology. It definitely helps alert, especially if you've been driving for long hours or, you know, you're not fully rested and you hit one of the strips. So it's a great technology that can help save lives.
Yeah, Minnesota made rumble strips, I learned, mandatory on rural undivided roads with a speed limit of 55 or higher. They did that nearly a decade ago. Do they prevent crashes?
They can help prevent crashes. I mean, they're not going to mitigate all crashes because there's multiple contributing factors to any type of crash, but they can help prevent a certain number of them. What the number is, I don't know, but I'm sure there's a research study out there that has looked into that.
As we wrap up, how should Wisconsin residents make sure their voices are heard on these large construction and repair projects?
So the Wisconsin DOT does a great job, as well as local communities, about getting the information out there when there's public hearings. And so going to the public hearing sessions and making sure your voice is heard is one way. Another way is to write your local officials. Let them know that you're hearing about a project that may or may not get funding. Write them and tell them, hey, you know, I support this for this, this, and this. Provide a personal story why this matters to you. I write quite often my elected officials here in Northeast Wisconsin. And literally I wrote, I believe it was end of last week or the week before. And then a couple business days later, I got a reply, you know, and that's been pretty typical from that elected official. You know, they might agree with me, they might not agree with me, but at the end of the day, by not getting your voice out there and not letting your elected officials and letting the engineers doing while they're doing your design planning, let them know your opinions, because at the end of the day, they only know what they see on the paper and based on the survey in the field.
Yeah.
But they need to know how that roadway will impact the people that are living in that community.
Ken, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Ken Mica is president of the Wisconsin section of the American Society of Civil Engineers and a project engineer in Green Bay. This was supposed to be the week when tens of thousands of people descended on Milwaukee for the Democratic National Convention, but the city's hopes of a monumental summer were dashed by the coronavirus. Major sporting events and festivals have also been canceled. And as Corrine Hess reports, the city's momentum has been stalled.
2020 didn't turn out like anyone expected, but for the city of Milwaukee, the list of disappointments is long. It's not just the DNC. Major sporting events have been moved or delayed. Staples, like Summerfest, were canceled. And at the Wisconsin State Fairgrounds, people have been reduced to waiting hours in line for takeout fried food and cream puffs.
There's the first order, and I'll be second.
Bob and Carrie Gundrum are there. They attended the fair every year.
We were looking around here wondering, with the weather, it would have been an amazing attendance down here. We love coming every year. It's one of the highlights of our summer. It's just awful that this place is empty right now.
It's hard to overstate just how devastating this summer has been for Milwaukee, especially with the loss of a full-scale Democratic National Convention. 50,000 people were expected to visit Milwaukee, including 15,000 media from around the world. The event was also expected to generate $200 million. Now it will be almost entirely virtual. National speakers won't travel here. Vice President Joe Biden is accepting the party's nomination in Delaware. Local politicians like Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett will speak in person, but to an empty arena. For Barrett, who has been mayor since 2004, the changes were disappointing, both personally and professionally.
Because I wanted to show off our city. I wanted the world to know Milwaukee's story. I wanted local businesses to enjoy an economic boost, and obviously those opportunities are not going to occur.
This was supposed to be a showcase summer for the Fiserv Forum that opened 2 years ago, for all the new restaurants that have opened downtown, for the city's growing skyline, and now the arena is mostly deserted. The Milwaukee Bucks were favorites to win their first national championship since 1971. They could have been hosting the NBA Finals this summer. Instead, they're playing a delayed season in Orlando. Next month, Kohler, just north of Milwaukee, would have hosted the Ryder Cup, drawing national golf enthusiasts. It got postponed until next year. Alex Lazary is a senior vice president of the Milwaukee Bucks and was instrumental in helping Milwaukee land the DNC. He says the Democrats made the right call not to come to Milwaukee, but the outcome isn't good for the city.
The reason this was such a big opportunity is because, you know, these type of summers and years don't come around very often. Bucks, deep playoff run, convention, state fair, Summerfest, Ryder Cup, having all of that coming within a 3 or 4 month span.
Lazary grew up in New York. He moved to Milwaukee having never been to the city after his father Mark purchased the Bucks in 2014. He says he wants people to know Milwaukee can compete with cities like Houston, Miami, Austin, Denver, and Chicago.
By winning the bid, that's what we were able to show. And I hope that it continues to allow us to be ambitious as a city.
What's left of the DNC will now take place at the Wisconsin Center, a downtown convention center that's much smaller than the Fiserv Forum. Marty Brooks heads the center. He says he hopes the city's leaders aren't soured on going after national events in the future.
We've handled this as best as any city could have in regards to all the changes that have been thrown at us in the past couple of months. I have lived in places where the cities had this, oh, poor us mentality, and that becomes very destructive.
Residents are doing the best they can. At State Fair Park, cars are lined up around the Milwaukee Mile Speedway with people waiting for takeout fair food. People hope that next summer is better, but this summer has left a mark. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And this is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.